Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Shadows of the Soul by Adeline Winters, narrated by Nicole Zanzarella. Chapter 1. It's getting hot in here. The handwritten letter clutched in my hand fluttered in the breeze, it having left a sour tang on the back of my tongue. If I let the paper go, the wind wouldn't relieve me of my burden. The elegant scrawl belied the nature of the words. My grandmother was reminding me of my obligation to update her on the other factions. She was head of the Order, leader of the Elementals, and I was uniquely positioned to provide intel on both the Shifters and the Vampires. "Bear," Rebecca declared with a snap of her fingers. I squinted at the burly man unfolding himself from the driver's seat of a sparkling new black truck. "Rhino," I countered.
"How obscure," Rebecca muttered.
"Final answer?"
Maggie asked from her perch between us on the porch swing. "Yes," Rebecca and I agreed. Guess the Shifter was our current game. Hudson Abbott, the principal, leader of all American PAC-affiliated shapeshifters, terror of Tennessee and bane of my life, had gleaned some of my secrets after we joined forces to stop the menace that was killing supernaturals. He'd taken it upon himself to keep a closer eye on me by moving into the covered stables on my property. Consequently, I'd gained a steady stream of random shifters traipsing across my land. Hudson had an unhealthy obsession with learning my secrets, along with his chief of security, Dangerous Dave. They dug and dug. So far, they'd come back empty-handed, but one wrong move from me and my world would turn upside down. Hudson was perceptive, analyzing, dangerous, and damn right annoying. He also kissed me like his life depended on it, and I was a heartbeat and hormone away from becoming a notch on his bedpost. "You're both wrong. He's a mongoose," Maggie announced. Shifters could sense each other's animal. It was a pack hierarchy and survival thing. A fox didn't want to be challenging a lion. I blinked. Mongoose shifter? That's new. Shifters were larger than their animal counterparts. How big would he be? "You know, this could be avoided if you just sleep with him. Get it out of your system," Rebecca said, plucking imaginary lint off her dress. "If it's inconvenient, why don't you sleep with him?" I snapped. She lifted her nose in the air. "He's not interested in me. Hudson Abbott only has eyes for a certain fiery-haired, green-eyed elemental. He'd probably move back to pack territory before the weekend if you got naked and dirty with him." I glanced at her. "I'm not having a one-night stand with a male who regards me with suspicion and contempt. Also, what are you saying? That I'm so boring in bed he'd run back to the shifter females before the sun had risen?" "Don't be ridiculous. You can act bad in bed. Lay there like a sack of potatoes." She sighed and lifted her hands in the air. "All this passive-aggressive flirting is making my hormones crazy." "Still, it's not a good enough excuse. I will not sleep with someone to satiate your hormones." "Spoilsport. Sex addict," I threw back. Hudson exited the stables and glanced our way. His chocolate-brown gaze collided with mine, and a sinful smile played on his lips. He was tall, with strong thighs wrapped in blue jeans and a white shirt that bordered on needing a restraining order with how it was clinging to him. The breeze carried the scent of freshly cut grass mingled with a rich, wild cedar that was purely Hudson. Ugh, now I was scenting him like a cat in heat. I sighed and leaned back. "He has enough shifter honeys to keep him occupied. I'm simply a challenge. He doesn't want me. He wants to prove he could have me." "So cynical," Rebecca murmured. She was right. I was cynical. Cynical kept you breathing. My last relationship ended in my torture and permanent maiming. It was bound to leave its psychic mark. Hudson knew my history, yet he pursued me all the same. "Incoming," Maggie said before jumping up and running into the house. The front door slammed behind her. Maggie was a bobcat shifter who'd arrived to me alone, afraid, and abused.
I'd offered her safety, a roof over her head, and food. In return, she helped to run my bed and breakfast home for the supernaturally inclined. Watching her emerge into a butterfly was worth it. But Hudson terrified her. It wasn't his fault. He'd outlawed the arranged marriage her father was forcing Maggie into. But while her mind had caught up, her heart hadn't. I winced as he breached the ward, my magic pulsing around him, assessing his threat and allowing him through. No murderous thoughts from the principal today. Lucky me.
You moved the ward boundary? Rebecca asked.
With us being the new popular shifter hangout, I had to, or suffer with permanent migraines.
It's dangerous, she mused. It's necessary.
The wards used to outline my property, including the stables. Now they looped around the main house and gardens, but excluded the main gate and stables, so the shifters were able to traipse back and forth as they pleased. Hudson arrived at the edge of my wraparound porch. The barrier was 7 feet off the ground. He tensed and jumped clean over the white fence, landing lightly in front of me and Rebecca. I scrunched the letter in my hand tighter, folding the paper so it disappeared into my palm.
Ladies, he drawled.
His southern lilt was faint, but smooth like warm whiskey. It made my insides melt, and my heart pitter-patter a happy dance against my ribs.
We talked about this, I reminded the useless organ.
He would tear you to tiny, tiny pieces after touching our soul.
Steps not good enough for you?
I asked, jerking my head toward the steps 6 feet away. His lips twitched.
Steps are overrated. I took the most direct path to reach you.
I sighed. Principal, what can I do for you? See, I could be nice. My heart rolled its eyes and sulked.
Can I borrow a whisk?
He asked, leaning back on the banister. It creaked but held. Kudos to the solid workmanship. Holding Hudson up was no mean feat. His ego doubled his weight.
I'll get it, Rebecca said, rising to her feet and floating away in a swath of pale yellow cotton.
She was ethereal, timeless, classic. Rebecca was a vampire princess and conducted herself in a regal manner that was bred, not learned.
What does the principal need a whisk for? I wondered.
Hudson grinned.
Pancakes. Would you like to come over for breakfast?
I opened my mouth to decline. This was also a game. He came to ask for something. Sugar, flour, a whisk, invited me for a meal, and I politely declined the offer. The paper in my hand tripled in weight, and I pressed my lips together. If I had breakfast, I could report back to my grandmother, and she would see I'd done my duty.
I make fabulous pancakes. Blueberries are my specialty,
he ventured, sensing my hesitation. Fine. He blinked and folded his arms.
Fine.
I gazed up at him, the sun haloed around his head in the cloudless sky.
Fine. I'm a sucker for blueberry pancakes, and if I come this once, you can leave me alone for a month.
He grinned.
A week at most, and I'm sure we can upgrade fine to exceptional.
I rolled my eyes. Let it go. I'd once informed him the man who stole my heart would have to be exceptional. He'd been making a big deal out of it ever since. Rebecca opened the front door and brandished a shiny metal whisk at Hudson.
Your whisk.
He plucked it from her fingers and smirked.
Tomorrow morning at 7:00.
Rebecca's mouth fell open.
Fine, I gritted out.
I'll survive breakfast. It was the smallest and quickest meal of the day. Get in, get out, and report back. Nothing to see here, grandmother. My brain slow-clapped at my cunning plan. Hudson turned and jumped over the fence again, landing with the feral grace only seen in cats.
Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, he called out. Prepare to savor it, Cora. Every single morsel will be an experience.
Breakfast is a necessity, not an experience.
Then you are doing it wrong. Breakfast with you will be entertaining.
I'm not your entertainment.
Of course not. But what follows should be.
I groaned and leaned back as he slunk away. We were doomed.
You're eating with the principal, Rebecca mused.
Is that after a night of hot and sweaty kinky shifter sex, or is it a fuel up before a morning of hot and sweaty shifter kinky sex? There will be no hot and sweaty kinky shifter sex.
Okay, no kink, Rebecca agreed.
Help me. I'm surrounded by supernatural sex-starved addicts. Maggie bounced out of the front door, her dark hair a wild tangle around her face.
You're letting him feed you? In his home? She whispered.
Hudson threw me a glance over his shoulder, grinned his predatory smile, white, perfect teeth on display, and winked. I frowned and narrowed my gaze. Technically, it's my home. Why? Maggie shuffled on her sandals, the soles grazing the wooden floor as she glanced at Hudson.
Nothing.
Hudson whipped his shirt over his head with one hand and let it fall to the ground. He picked up an axe left buried in the tree stump, dropped a large piece of timber on it, and swung the axe. The wood split in two with a loud crack. The birds chattered in the trees. I wondered if they, too, were in awe of the specimen before us. His muscles bunched and tensed with the motion.
Holy vampire ovaries, that man is a thirst trap, Rebecca mumbled.
Why the hell is he chopping wood? It's not even cold, I pointed out.
Does it matter? She shot back.
So they've grown again, Maggie said.
She hooked a thumb over her shoulder.
Do you want to see?
I jumped to my feet and followed a twitchy Maggie with my vampire princess sidekick in tow. We trotted down the steps and around the outside of the house. We passed under some mighty magnolia trees whose leaves rustled in the breeze and entered the garden area reserved for the dead. Unmarked graves dotted the lawn, 25 in total. If you weren't part of a pack or vampire house, you were a loner. Loners didn't have access to consecrated ground and were subsequently denied the rites of passage. I had lots of land and a gift to help those loners pass on. During the final fight with Rick, the elemental, he'd revealed I'd not been simply giving the dead a place to rest. I'd been getting them a backdoor pass to heaven. After crossing Jennifer over, Rick's last victim, I ceased crossing over loners. Until I better understood the mechanics of my powers, I deemed messing with the Almighty's grand plan to be unwise. I didn't want to draw attention to myself or my activities. We came to a stop under my largest magnolia tree, its branches draping over the ground, casting a sweet, heady fragrance in the surrounding air. Tom Wafer was buried here. He should have been laid to rest in the Tupperware tub I'd gathered his exploded body into. But Maggie, in her teenage wisdom and thoughtfulness about recycling, had emptied him into the ground and covered his remains with soil. All creatures have residual magic. It's why we bury our dead in coffins and jars. If that magic fell into the wrong hands, it would be dangerous. White roses bloomed over the plot. They sprawled along the lawn and climbed up the trunk of the tree before weaving amongst the branches. The roses themselves weren't bad news.
Didn't you cut these down a few days ago? Rebecca asked.
Yes.
Should they be bleeding like that?
Maggie asked, leaning over to study the crimson droplets rolling over the snowy velvet petals.
No.
Rebecca wrinkled her nose and stepped back.
What does it mean?
My gaze darted over the flowers.
Nothing good, I answered.
Magic skittered over the ground, the charge raising the hairs on my arms. The heavy scent of roses coated my mouth like fur. Someone had screwed with Tom's remains. Something unnatural lurked on my property, something that had corrupted a symbol of purity. Evil. Chapter 2. Mushrooms are the devil's food. It's a little known fact that shifters don't howl at the moon, and vampires can sunbathe. Both species had hearts that beat, and being bitten by either resulted in blood loss, but not a dramatic change of genetics. However, the rivalry between the two factions was on point. The only thing they hated more than each other was my faction, the Elementals. We were considered an unstable, unpredictable, and unnatural race, despite our magic being rooted in the elements that surrounded the natural Earth. Hudson told me it was because of our gifts, that they couldn't be sure what they were facing when going head-to-head with one of us. It was more fundamental than that. Elementals were embedded into normal society. They taught your children math, dispensed your medication, and advised the president on matters of security. We were everywhere. It wasn't our abilities the other factions didn't like. It was our influence. Still, the shifters and vampires used our skill sets. Medical care proved one of the biggest issues for shifters. There were few doctors in the supernatural arena to see to their needs. I was trained and had the basic equipment to treat 90% of problems shifters faced. After all, their kind didn't get cancer or suffer with heart attacks. My side business brought in more revenue than the bed and breakfast that catered to lone supernaturals. As of 2 months ago, the pack had employed me to check into all shifter deaths. My gift, or curse, depending on how you viewed the world, meant I was uniquely qualified to do this. Being a psychic retro enabled me to view the last moments of someone's life. Rebecca floated through the kitchen door, her nose wrinkling at the fried chicken on my fork. To my knowledge, she was the only vegetarian vampire in existence. It seemed unnatural. "What is that smell?" she asked as she opened the refrigerator. The weird aroma hit me a second later. I dropped my fork. "Maggie cooked," I explained. Maggie could bake cookies, any kind of cookies, double chocolate, lemon, oatmeal. She was an expert. Now take her out of that speciality and she could ruin toast. Rebecca reached inside the fridge and took out a foil-covered glass dish. She peered under the wrapping like she was checking for a bomb. "I think it's lasagna," she stated with a sigh of relief. Maggie bounced into the room with a smile as big as the sun. "You found my mushroom lasagna. It's a new recipe." I grabbed my fork and shoved the fried chicken in my mouth to hide my smirk. Rebecca eyed the dish with a newfound horror. "Thank you. I've already eaten." "Nonsense. You can try a bite," Maggie said, snatching the dish and heading for the microwave. "Remove the foil," Rebecca and I reminded her. "Yes, yes, I'm not stupid," Maggie muttered, following our instructions and shoving the dish in the microwave. The front door creaked open, and the familiar sound of expensive Italian leather slapped against the wooden floors. I got comfy. This should be good. Sebastian rounded the kitchen door and blinked at the microwave. "Too late now. She's seen you. Should have run when you smelled the mushrooms." "Sebastian," Maggie said, grabbing some plates from the cupboard. "Perfect timing to try my new mushroom lasagna." "I'll hand it to the Vampire Prince of North America." He had a Vegas-worthy poker face. He slid into the chair across from me, his eyes burning holes into my head in accusation as Maggie presented him with a steaming plate of gray and pale cream slop. He armed himself with a fork and eyeballed the plate. Bella, or the white furry menace as I'd nicknamed her, flounced into the room with a mouse between her teeth. She dropped it on Sebastian's expensive loafers, turned, stuck her tail in the air, and slunk out the room. Bella was a floozy. She offered males gifts, but me, her shelterer and caregiver, nothing but haughty looks. Sebastian and Rebecca eyed her with jealousy. Being a cat excused you from sampling Maggie's culinary delights. My plate of fried chicken disappeared, and some of the bland slop appeared in front of me. "It's better for you," Maggie said with her hands on her hips. "Everyone should aim to have at least 2 meat-free meals a week." Sebastian, myself, and Rebecca scooped a forkful and simultaneously deposited it in our mouths. One for all and all for one. I swallowed, and it came straight back into my mouth, my throat rebelling against the slimy taste, like slugs slithering onto my tongue. Rebecca's delicate features twisted, and Sebastian chewed thoughtfully. I redoubled my efforts and won the argument with my body. It was heavy on the garlic, sloppy in texture, and the weird little crunchy bits tasted suspiciously like burnt Parmesan. "Could I have my chicken? I don't want it to go to waste," I asked. Maggie huffed and held my plate hostage. "You don't like it?" "I'm not a big lover of mushrooms."
"Me either," Sebastian said, jumping on my excuse and placing the fork on the plate.
Maggie turned to Rebecca. "And you?" She tilted her head.
"I like the concept, but it needs something."
Maggie swapped my plate and I tucked into the chicken, devouring it before anyone got any bright ideas about stealing my food again.
"It's Monday," I stated. "What are you doing here?"
Sebastian blinked.
"Can I not come to see my best friend without intentions?"
I arched a brow. Sebastian was beautiful. Everything screamed perfection, from his manicured nails to his trimmed 5 o'clock shadow.
"She's having breakfast with Hudson tomorrow," Rebecca stated.
"Traitor," I mouthed. She shrugged. "I'm living my non-existent social life through you."
Sebastian's eyebrow twitched. "He invited you for breakfast."
Maggie shot him a nervous look.
"Yes," I answered.
"Alone?"
Sebastian checked.
"I assume so."
"Is he cooking?"
"What is this, 20 questions? Would you like me to film it for you?"
"Is he cooking?"
"Yes, he borrowed a whisk. He's making pancakes."
"Blueberry," Rebecca commented.
I waved my fork at her.
"What she said."
Sebastian leaned back in his chair with a huff.
"He's playing hardball."
"He's playing with fire," I muttered, "but what's the problem?"
"Nothing," Sebastian said. "Just don't reciprocate the offer."
"Wasn't planning on it," I answered. The sooner it was over with, the sooner I could report to my grandmother, because I'd be damned if she was visiting me here.
"But you still haven't explained why you are here."
Sebastian sighed.
"The Princess of Italy is currently in residence."
Rebecca groaned.
"Maria, she's beautiful, but a bitch."
Sebastian ran a hand down his face.
"Every month it's someone new."
The king and queen of American vampires were busy hunting for a suitable bride for their son. Being my best friend, I often ran interference for Sebastian, appearing as his date for the obligatory monthly family meal. King Leon hated me. Queen Aira tolerated me. Fun times.
"So you're hiding?"
I asked.
"I'm visiting my best friend, checking on her healing."
I rotated my ankle. It still ached, particularly at night.
"I'm all good."
He nodded. I reached across the table and gave his arm a squeeze.
"How long is she staying?"
He shrugged.
"Until she gets a ring on her finger."
I pressed my lips together. "Perhaps you could have a long engagement?" He glared at me.
"The second my father sniffs weakness, I'll be at the altar faster than you can say honeymoon."
Rebecca hummed under her breath.
"I'd offer to be your wife, but I'd cause more drama than a celebrity at a teenage party."
He shook his head.
"No, it's time I addressed my responsibilities."
I grimaced in sympathy for Sebastian.
"It's time?" I checked.
He nodded.
"It's time."
Oh boy. Chapter 3. Heebie-jeebies. We define insomnia as habitual sleeplessness. I yo-yoed between being an insomniac and a chronic sleeper. When I did sleep, not even the dead could wake me, which was a good thing, as they were often the cause of my unconscious state. Tonight, sleep eluded me. I threw my legs across the sheets, seeking the cool patches of cotton, and concentrated on the luminous sheen of the full moon hung low in the cloudless sky. It was closer to the Earth tonight, a supermoon that was a reminder that we were both insignificant in the grand scheme of things and part of something wondrous. The heavy hum of power from the room on the other side of my apartment taunted me with my ignorance, my arrogance, and my stupidity. Heaven. I had a direct line to heaven. How many of the loners had I granted access to somewhere I shouldn't? How many had sins which weighed their souls and bound them for hell? I rolled onto my back and stared at the slowly rotating fan. The whirling set my teeth on edge. An unusual thrum of power rumbled through me. I huffed, swung my legs over the side, and pattered through my living room on bare feet. I drew the key from the chain hanging around my neck and chanted the spell to unlock the door. My hand paused on the cool metal handle before I pushed it open and faced my demons. A bitter note of deceit tinted the swirl of peace that encompassed me. I'd duped heaven. I'd fed it at least one soul that wasn't worthy and possibly damned my own. Ignorance didn't equal innocence. The orb in the center of the room glowed an ethereal white. Wisps of pure energy caressed the ceiling and walls. I grabbed the infused oil from the side table and poured it around the orb in a circle while whispering the incantation meant to close portals. Bitter citrus and sage seeped into the air as the liquid settled in the burnt-out crease left behind by my earlier attempts. I snagged the matches, lit one, and dropped it onto the oil. Fire spun along the floor and intensified the sage. The orb shrank in on itself. I raised my voice and sunk more magic into every word that passed my lips as I commanded the portal to shut. My power sought the cracks and exploited them. It dug its claws into the portal and tightened the noose, drawing it closed.
Para de lastimarme.
My head snapped to the right. A thin African-American boy, dressed in blue shorts and a white t-shirt, too small for his body, stood before me. He was 7 years old at most. My heart shattered at the lost and pained look in his deep brown eyes. The orb flared and doubled in size, slipping through my net. Shit, I mumbled as the fiery oil burnt out and left another crisp ochre mark on my hardwood floors. The boy disappeared, leaving me alone with my road to heaven wide open. I stumbled through the door into the living room. Harry? I hollered as I flopped on my sofa. My ghostly friend shot through the wall and hovered over my slumped body. He peered down at me. Are you well? I ran a hand through my long, copper hair. Do you still feel a pull to this house? He shook his head and clasped his hands behind his back. No, not since you destroyed the Soul Stone. I stay because you need me, not because I'm compelled. My head dropped on the pillow. That's what I thought. So why was the ghost of a 7-year-old child hanging around my house? This was not good. Should I retrieve Miss Lexington? Harry asked with a frown. I huffed and slapped a hand over my forehead. How would you do that? A deep frown marred Harry's features. He was still struggling with the drawbacks of being departed, mainly because I was the only person who could see and hear him. Don't worry, I reassured him. I'm okay. Are you sure? It's time for breakfast. Perhaps some sustenance will recharge your batteries. A groan left my throat as I slammed my eyes closed. Hudson, right. I had a pancake date with Terror of Tennessee. Ah, the first romantic stirrings of true love, Harry lamented. I peeked one eye open to catch him staring wistfully out the window, caught in some long-ago memory of meeting his wife. The principal isn't looking for my heart. He's only interested in my vagina. I think you underestimate the draw he has to you, Harry spluttered. No, I haven't. When the Terror of Tennessee wants to cook me breakfast, it's for one thing only, and it's not to spend time with my
Sample complete. Ready to continue?